understand.
That's the looking at the etymology of the word. The word Godhead comes from the word Godhood, like we say womanhood, childhood, manhood, Godhood. So who's the supreme personality of womanhood? Like that. Maybe we could say like Elizabeth Taylor.
So what about Ross Ronnie?
Okay. Different people. So who's that makes sense? Who's the supreme personality of Godhood? Well, Shiva's a personality of Godhood, and you know, Brahma and different people, but the supreme personality, okay. Yeah. Okay. Praha.
Praha.
Said.
Said.
Vrittaha.
Vrittaha.
Insatisfaction.
Insatisfaction.
Putraya.
Putraya.
Upon the sun.
Upon the sun.
Yeah, so putra is sun, right? And putraya. Unto the sun. Unto the sun. Krishnaya. Unto Krishna. Bhutakrit.
Bhutakrit.
The creator of the universe.
The creator of the universe.
Tasmaidam Bhagavatam Puranam Dashalakshinam Toktam Bhagavata Praha Pritta Putraya Bhutakrit. The next slide, number 4 there, has translation. Thereupon, the supplementary Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, which was described by the personality of Godhead and which contains 10 characteristics, was told with satisfaction by Father Brahma to his son, Narada. Please repeat. Thereupon, the supplementary Vedic literature.
Srimad Bhagavatam.
Which was described by the personality of Godhead. And which contains ten characteristics. Was told with satisfaction by father to his son.
Was told with satisfaction by the father to his son.
Okay. So just, of course, the perspective for the verse, of course, the general perspective is that the sages of Naimisharanya, you know, are trying to find the appropriate sacrifice for this age by which people can become completely satisfied. Yeah. And free from the destruction and creation of this material world and the great pangs and sufferings of birth and death. And so then they elect Suta Goswami. And Suta Goswami says, well, the answer is Srimad Bhagavatam to your questions. And he said, I heard it from Sukadeva Goswami. Yata matam, yataditam, yatamati. And now I shall try to make you experience it as I experienced it. So it's not just like a plain mechanical transmission of Vedic mantras like it's done in the technical work, but actually is to get a comprehension across by picking out certain histories, by expanding certain points. So then he begins to describe the whole history of how Maharaj Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami had this encounter, how it was exchanged, who were they. And that's the whole first canto. And second canto, Sukadeva Goswami presents everything in 3 chapters. Maharaj Parikshit asked for more, and he explains how Brahma explained the Bhagavatam, you know, to Narada. Then in chapter 8, we saw before, Maharaj Parikshit says, okay, after Narada heard all this, how did he explain it? How did he expand it? And he gives maybe like about 10, 12, 15 questions. You know. And then in this chapter, Sukadeva Goswami answers the questions by citing the Lord's version, by explaining where it originally came from, like that, you know, and just 4 verses. And that's it. He describes that incident and the qualifications Brahma developed to be able to receive that class. You know? And then he describes how Brahma, you know, Lord, you know, recommended the knowledge he'd given him, told him, this will allow you to do your service without being entangled by the result. And then he disappeared. Then it says, in this way, you know, once upon a time, Lord Brahma, who was the father of all living entities and desiring his self-satisfaction for his purposes in Sankirtan, did austerities and got this message. And he had a very, very great son, the foremost of his sons, foremost respected and loved of his sons, as we're discussing the last few days, was Narada. And Narada Muni acted very, very nicely to please his father. You know? And because of that, Lord Brahma then spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam, which has 10 characteristics. Okay. Okay. So if we go to the next slide, number 5, we get the purport. Prabhupada says, although Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken in four verses, it had 10 characteristics, which will be explained in the next chapter. Okay. In the four verses, it is first said that the Lord existed before the creation. The Lord existed before the creation. Yeah. And thus, the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam includes the Vedanta aphorism, Janmadi Asya Yataha. Or Janmadi Asya. Okay. The next slide. Number 6. Janmadi Asya is the beginning. Yet the four verses in which it is said that the Lord is the root of everything that be, beginning from the creation up to the supreme abode of the Lord, naturally explain the 10 characteristics. Okay? Yeah. Janmadi Asya is the beginning. Yeah. Yet the four verses, yeah, explain everything all the way from the beginning up to, you know, beyond this material world to the abode of the Lord. One should not misunderstand by wrong interpretations that the Lord spoke only four verses, and that therefore all the rest of the 17,994 verses are useless. Yeah. Therefore, all the rest of the, yeah. So here we say 18,000, but here Prabhupada is giving this other definition, 17,994. And there's a very, very good paper written by Advaita Das. Probably you know him. Where is it? Rutgers, I think. And he's at, his name, something, I forgot what his name is. Bryant something. And it's called The Date and Provenance of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where it came from and the dating. He goes through all of the very, very good survey of the Indological studies and the history of the Bhagavatam, his dating, all these kind of things. And this excellent, you know, paper, and giving all these positions and certain things, just, you know, the eliminating very, very good arguments why certain materialistic theories just are just, you know, not even worth considering. Yeah. And so I think it's there, but maybe someplace else also. I've seen devotees trying to come out with 18,000 verses, and I've heard that that Gopi Puranadana had done something to come out with breaking it into the meter. But other ways of doing it, it's, you know, it's hard to find 18,000 verses altogether. But anyway, traditionally 17,994, and it's not that, you know, 17,990 of them are useless. The 10 characteristics, as will be explained in the next chapter. So the next chapter is pretty much just going to be explaining one after another what are these 10 characteristics, what do they mean. And then after that, it'll go right into the actual creation then. You know, creation of the universe, starting with the Purusha avatars, and then the different elements being created one after another like that. Because this is what Maharaj Pariksha wants to know. What is this world? How is it related to Krishna? The 10 characteristics, as will be explained in the next chapter, require so many verses just to explain them properly. And slide number 7. Brahmaji had also advised Narada previously that he should explain the idea he had heard from Brahmaji. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed this to Srila Rupa Goswami in a nutshell. But the disciple, Rupa Goswami, expanded this very elaborately, and the same subject was further expanded by Jiva Goswami, and even further by Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yeah. So in some ways, I think what Prabhupada is talking, of course, is the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Madhya Lila, chapter 19, is the Rupa Shiksha. It's one chapter. Then after that, 20 through 24 or 25, remember, is the Sanatan Shiksha. And so many of our citations we see are just, you know, from those two chapters, like that. And popular, I know, was Charyas, too. So in chapter 19, Prabhupada actually says these instructions at Dashashvamedha Ghat over 10 days in Prayag were the basis then of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, like that. And so he expanded it into, I don't know, like 1,700 verses or something like that. What is it? Something like that, yeah. And it's described as an essence. Prabhupada calls it the complete science of God. So then after that, Jiva Goswami, of course, wrote a commentary on the instructions of Lord Chaitanya, on the Srimad Bhagavatam, on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he said, my uncle has done a wonderful job, but he said, this is a very difficult subject matter, and so there's no problem in trying to explain it in more detail. Then after that, there's a Amrita Bindu, something about Amrita Sindhu Bindu, Amrita Sindhu Bindu, by Vishnudatta Chakravarti. And as I've seen it, it's not so big, a commentary like that. But then, of course, we have Prabhupada's translation into English. And then we have Dhanadhar Swami's waves of devotion, which gives, to my appreciation, it makes it maybe six times more comprehensible with access to the original Sanskrit, with a visual graphics of all the analysis. It's very difficult to picture it all like that. Actually, when we were giving the seminar on this, one devotee engineer, he took all of the divisions and the subdivisions, Alambana, Udipana, and did it all in one big graphic. And I have the file. but to print it, you have to go to some place like, these with Kinko's, or what do you call these places, Office Max, because it takes a full architectural thing. And when it's printed out, it's really for our kind of mentality, this analytical mentality. And you see, oh, okay, there's the whole ocean and all the different divisions and subdivisions. So Rupa Goswami, I guess, was keeping all this in his mind. He didn't have like a printer or a plotter at that time. So Brahmaji advised Narada, he should expand the idea. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Rupa Goswami in a nutshell. But Rupa Goswami expanded this very elaborately. And the same subject was further expanded by Jiva Goswami and even further by Vishwanath Chakravarti. Okay. Prabhupada says, we are just trying. This is slide number 8. Number 8 there. Maybe I should have followed up on marching forward. We are just trying to follow in the footsteps of all these authorities. We are just trying to follow in the footsteps. So Srimad Bhagavatam is not like ordinary fiction or mundane literature. It is unlimited in strength, and however one may expand it according to one's ability, Bhagavatam still cannot be finished by such expansion. However much we expand it, doesn't matter, we can't finish it. Okay, next slide, number 9. And then Prabhupada finishes off his purport here by saying, Srimad Bhagavatam, being the sound representation of the Lord, is simultaneously explained in 4 verses and in 4 billion verses at the same time. Inasmuch as the Lord is smaller than the atom and bigger than the unlimited sky, such is the potency of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. So let's go down here to number 10. Okay. I think this is one point here. Prabhupada said this will be explained in more detail in the next chapter, like that. I think maybe even in the text there. So next chapter, of course, starts with text number 1, 210.1. And in the Sanskrit there, hope you can see it, is Sri Sukha Uvacha Atra Sargo Visargascha Stanam Poshanam Utaya Manvantar Esha Anukata Niroda Muktir Ashraya. And word by word explains these 10 characteristics. which, as I understand, are common to, all the Puranas or many Puranas have to have these 10 characteristics to call the Purana or something, or 5 or something like that, that we discussed. So one is Sarga, creation of the universe. Visarga, sub-creation. Stanam, the planetary systems. Poshanam, protection by the Lord. Utaya, the creative impetus. Manvantar, changes of Manus. Isha Anukata, the science of God. Nirodha, going back home, back to Godhead. Mukti, liberation. Ashraya, Sama Monam, like that. Now if we go next slide, number 11, sir. And here then we have comparing this with the canto titles. On the left is the definitions previously given. And on the right are the canto titles. And I couldn't understand why are the cantos given these names, you know. Apparently, as we're understanding, remembering, Sridhar Swami, he says the topics are discussed in one canto after another. And then Jiva Goswami is saying, no, that many topics are discussed, you know. So Srila Prabhupada caught between two peacocks. As I remember, he says, this first canto can be called creation. The second canto can be called the cosmic manifestation, like that. But if you look at the correspondence to the word-by-word definitions in the canto titles, it's interesting. One, Sarga, creation of the universe. And Prabhupada's canto title is creation. Two, sub-creation. And number two is the cosmic manifestation. So three is planetary systems, and three is status quo. So you see some difference. Four is protection by the Lord, and four is creation of the fourth order. Five is the same, creative impetus. Six is changes of Manus, and six in the Bhagavatam is prescribed duties for mankind, which of course are generated by the Manus. Seven is the same, science of God. Eight, going back home, back to Godhead, and it's called here in the Bhagavatam is withdrawal of the cosmic creations. Nine is the same, liberation. Ten is the same, some monam. Then after that, the 11th canto finishes off the Bhagavatam, the descendants of Armanu after Krishna. And then, I don't know what it does. Somewhere, one of the two, there's the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam and the summary of Srimad Bhagavatam. I think it's Canto 12. So going back up, then, Sarga, as we're reading it, is the creation by Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu generates the universal shell. He supplies the elements. He supplies Veda. So it's like the minister of prisons. The minister of prisons will send, you know, cement, rebar, you know, glass, wood, what else? You know, the laws and rules for the prison, the construction, yeah, you know, things like that. And then he'll also send the prisoners. Okay. Then Visarga, called the sub-creation or the cosmic manifestation, is in the creation by Brahma. Given all these elements, and having gotten the assurance from Vishnu, that Mahavishnu, that he won't become contaminated by being the trustee for the prison, he starts the creation. He's a prisoner, but he's called trustee, the most trusted prisoner. Mm-hmm. And he also knows the whole purpose of the thing, because it makes a big difference, even though the plans are there. Why am I creating this? You know? So the purpose of the thing, of course, is known to him, too. He's seen Vaikuntha. He knows the goal. Mm-hmm. And then number three is called planetary systems or the status quo. And number four is called creation of the fourth order. So here, somehow, at some point, then Mahavishnu creates the universe with Brahma. Brahma then creates the universe with Manu, you know, and Prajapatis. And then Swayambhuva Manu and Daksha and everybody else, they start to create all these species of life, you know, which I guess we might look at as the planetary systems. Because there's the Yakshaloka, Rakshasaloka, Gandharvaloka, Bhumandala, Patala. So these are all the creations by these living entities. And the fourth creation, creation of the fourth order, yeah, this is where I'm starting to fall apart in my analysis, but maybe that's then the creation by living entities, the kings who then create everything else like that. Okay. Then five, creative impetus, prescribed manu kanta. So, you know, maybe later on we can go back and people can give more, you know, reason what each of these categories is. I think in the next chapter there's not that much detail given more than just like what I've given, the titles. No. The ultimate thing, of course, is the summum bonum, and that's number 10. And the summum bonum is Krishna, and the other nine categories are there to, you know, to be able to understand the summum bonum, which is everything. Okay. We finally come down to our last slide here, number 12, next to last. And we Prabhupada had said, you didn't. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is not like ordinary fiction or mundane literature. It is unlimited in strength, unlimited in strength. And however one may expand it according to one's ability, Bhagavatam still cannot be finished by such expansion. So we got a nice picture of Bhaktivinoda Thakur with his book, and then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati with his word processor, like that, producing his literature. Then we have Srila Prabhupada talking to Hansa Duda with Suchandra Brahmacharya in the background there. It's now about Bhakti Bhushan Maharaj. Then the right side, there's one lady in Raksha. Yeah, she's actually the girl with the sari has given the book to this bigger Russian girl. And in the end, a few four pictures of what he took. In the end, she's folding up the money, the rubles, and putting them in her book bag. So she had a very nice preaching encounter, expanding Srimad Bhagavatam into different languages and different circumstances so people can appreciate it. So we're trying to look at all this perspective, and the verses directly before, of course, seem to be talking about the characteristics of one who's going to receive the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni, and his qualifications, you know, so on. But now it's getting into more technical details of what the Bhagavatam is. It's kind of like an overview of the content. And we were, you know, thinking about this, and it's kind of like this. Yeah, our perspective is the idea is that the Bhagavatam can be spoken in 10 and 4 verses. And I would say you can also go the other direction. You know, again, Prabhupada said, anybody who chants the Panchatattva mantra and follows it with the Hare Krishna mantra has achieved the perfection of life. So that the whole Bhagavatam can be compressed into those two mantras, all the wisdom of the Bhagavatam, all the 10 characteristics, those two mantras. You know, so we can go backwards like that, from 4 verses down to 2 verses, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Or else then we can expand it, you know, heading the opposite direction. You know? And this Prabhupada said, he talks about the qualifications of the teacher, but it also seems very much, you know, to depend upon the necessities of the student. You know? So Prabhupada, for example, in the first canto, I was noticing that Prabhupada has very little Sanskrit. You know, when he quotes a verse, he may say it, but doesn't give the citation, the reference, and doesn't give the Devanagari. So it seems that his consideration of Western people is that this would be too much for them, you know. But after seeing the devotees and seeing the people in the West, then he increased his level. And so after that, in the second canto, whatever, then it starts to have, you know, full citations and everything else like that. So that's one thing that seeing the necessities and seeing the character of your audience, you know, then you take the Bhagavatam and, again, pulling out specific topics for a specific discussion at a certain time. That's actually, of course, exactly what Bhagavatam means, that, you know, the Bhagavatam is an anthology. You know, Sukadeva Goswami is picking out certain stories to illustrate things, and his student is asking certain pivotal questions, and Sukadeva Goswami is examining them every now and again to see his level of comprehension, and depending on that, he's presenting different things like that. You know? So this whole point about all of us, you know, that's why, again, what I like about these Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Baibaba and everything else things is they form a very, very, you know, reasonable overview with some association to discuss the verses and stuff like that, and going through, like, again, we're doing like one chapter a week, like that. Or sometimes there's two because they're short, and sometimes you slow them down. But you definitely, that's what you realize is, you know, there's no way on earth that we can, you know, do this at this pace. But it gives you a good overview, you know. And then after that, and some people, for their own personal purification, so they can do Sankirtan to a certain kind of people, they go back and focus on different areas like that. But pretty much right from the very beginning, I personally felt a lot of impetus, you know, from Krishna, Prabhupada, and everything else, to Kapila Sankhya, and the science aspect and the Sankhya aspect. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita seemed like a little bit beyond me at that time, you know. But then, and so that's what I ended up doing, of course. I gravitated when, as the opportunities gradually came, in spite of obstacles, I ended up with the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And then more specifically, I discovered I'm not really a physical or a physical scientist or a chemical scientist. It requires too narrow of an intelligence for myself. It'll be very, very laser-brained. So I kind of end up being a cultural anthropologist. So on. Yeah, and then you start to define, you start to see things in, you know, the world around you and people like that. You have some interest in preaching and some motivation and also some fear that you go to hell if you don't preach. You'll be rejected by a spiritual master. So then when you start looking for opportunities, you know, and then what's the basis? You know, books are the basis. And Bhagavatam, of course, is the heart of everything else. You know, nectar of devotion, Krishna book, you know, the light of the Bhagavat, Chaitanya Charitamrita. These are all, you know, basically presentations of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So even more specifically, you know, we're trying to talk about this, that our particular nature, again, is this cultural anthropology, psychology. And, okay, I have my nature, but how important is it? You know, I think it's kind of any significance that Tamal Krishnamurti, he wasn't able to finish his PhD thesis. Maybe he wanted to do it, but Prabhupada had some other job for him. A couple other people had the same impression. You know, Mars left, and Prabhupada said, okay, enough of that nonsense. Somebody else can finish that, you know. And so everybody has their particular abilities, you know. I can travel. I can travel light. Other people get sick, everything else. The other people have that ability, other people don't. So that's what I'm doing, and I can give good logical, rational explanations of things. But in terms of doing book distribution on the street, I'm not so good. That's kind of putting it mildly. I'm sure if I got into it and went after it, of course, you know, a long time, I would develop it, you know. But it's just not a natural tendency. The other godbrothers I have, like Vijayadatma and stuff, it's natural. It's just a natural element. You know, like that. They had a lot of brothers and sisters, and they're used to dealing with this kind of, you know, a lot of other people and different mentalities and arguing. They have a short memory span. Yeah. Sometimes even like, you know, almost neurotic. So whatever the person, they deal with one person, they just sell them a book. If the guy is friendly, they just forget it. They go to the next guy. The guy, you know, insults them, they forget it. So you have to be, you can't carry your baggage, you know. Can't keep your attitude if that kind of Sankirtan. But the same kind of process, again, we did one university program, one Sankirtan devotee like that, I think it was Stanford, and he was big Sankirtan devotee, book distributor, so he was supposed to give the lecture. Maybe like three of us up there behind the table. And when it came to him to give the lecture, he just froze. I think he just literally froze, you know, because he would have had to talk for about 45 minutes about the idea and everything else, you know, and all these people are Stanford students. You can tell these are very intelligent and also critical, you know, people. So we're all kind of looking in the audience and kind of wondering. And so I kind of then pulled the microphone out of his hands, actually physically looking at it, trying to make it look kind of natural. And then I went on and gave a presentation like that, you know, which came out pretty well, you know. But that's it. Everybody got their nature, their situation, and therefore, you know, books are the basis. Books are for Brahmins. Bhagavad Gita philosophy, Bhagavad Gita stories, the scholar and the boatman. They're not sufficient for most cases. My experience again and again is Upadeshamrita, you know, with the purports, commentaries, is so sufficient. And if you need it, then you know, each of those citations takes you to more detail like that. So building our own logic, you know, and in terms of the kind of community we come in contact with, of course, you know, I've been traveling and preaching continuously in South America, India, and we've been doing good science programs. We've actually been making devotees, distributing books, you know, doing good work. You know, it's not all that great, being quite frank, but it's okay. We're contributing, you know? And so, but now then in our own life, where we're getting more like settling down, and I know the audience, and they're going around and around. I know what kind of analogies they need, what works, what doesn't work. So now for me, it's coming to this point of more of coming more to the writing level, and other people like that who are working more like this more fundamental level, you know, the age and stuff. So I mentioned our natural attraction with Carl Jung and everything else was there. So it started off with, of course, in some ways, before there, in the university, they teach you a little bit about Jung, but you don't really know what's going on. And also some contact here and there, looking for things to satisfy my passions. I was reading a little bit of them here and there. It was appropriate, you know. So I think we read the Tavistock lectures. They're very, very nice. Tavistock, Tavistock. One book, very nice if you have some interest in that area. And also very challenging to our own Krishna consciousness. You know? So then after that, we got his biography. We saw Prabhupada in the, what's the book? Dialectical Spiritualism. After hearing all the rest of these scholars, you know, and philosophers and everything else, they come to Jung. At the end, Prabhupada says, he, of all of them, he seems to have the most sense, like that, you know. And in going to his biography then, which is actually, it turns out now, I'm just discovering just 2 or 3 days ago, the biography is not really his biography. It's something approximating that, you know, approximating an autobiography. But anyway, you discover so many more of his ideas, his personal perspective on things, his real confidential thinking about things. And so many things, are, of course, are so like, what's the word, like, you know, copacetic with our ideas, our perspective. Somehow or other, the intellectual community and he himself, his own spiritual development, introspection, sincere effort, were coming to some pretty good realizations. And again, this is back in 1932, you know, and maybe people are my age, they can remember. I mean, I was just remembering one of my friends asking me, well, what are you, an introvert or an extrovert? You know, and he didn't mention Carl Jung, but that was just passing around in society. Was people were interested in that in 1960s and, you know, that kind of thing. So I would say, looking at it, that again, that so much of what Jung did, his work, you know, others too, but especially his, pioneer, created the atmosphere for the hippie revolution and everything else that Prabhupada was able, you know, to get our ideas across to many people quickly. Other than that, oh my God, you know, back before 1940s and that kind of tough stuff, people, their bodily concept and everything else, you know, if you came across a horde of Germanic, you know, peoples coming down to face off the Roman armies, you your guys are brutal, you know, like that. You know, seeing your eye is standing along the road, probably just chop us in half just to make sure we wouldn't cause any problem. It's very, like, brutal consciousness, you know, everything else, you know. So somehow or other, it was developing. So then the biography, and then we're trying to do some preaching on this area, good reactions, meeting a lot of nice people. And saying this because I think everybody, we have to take the Bhagavatam. You got to take these verses and expand them in our own way, you know, writing, producing, and the Bible. Again, this is a pretty much literary level we're talking about now, you know, where you have to do some writing and stuff like that eventually. Prabhupada's saying a sannyasi who doesn't produce something in writing is simply a parasite on society, you know. So we go ahead, and then we try to write something, we try to preach, we try to hear something, try to go out, we meet people. So we're having very good results in universities and psychology groups in Chicago also. We just came back in there. It was nice. Then we wrote an article with Nitai Gaurisundar, who's a psychiatrist. Okay, and he considered finally that probably it wouldn't be of so much interest to the psychiatric community now, because they're so much pill-oriented. So I began to think, well, maybe there's Jungian journals. I mean, it's kind of like a dead society, but maybe there are. So then I had to do the whole thing to go someplace where I could research and find them, and I found there are several. Journal of Analytical Society from London, Spring, which is the oldest journal, probably from Jung's time, and then one was in New York, one in San Francisco. And you begin to sense that this is a pretty, you know, robust community. We're dealing with a lot of people who can, you know, appreciate the message if we get it across. And the Journal of Analytical Psychology had one article about one of Jung's patients, researching different letters and very interesting things about his relationship with her and how she had become a collaborator. You know? And he was quoting some citations, and I followed one of those back to Jung's lectures on Kundalini. He gave a whole series of lectures on those based upon one German, Hauer, who gave an explanation of the Kundalini Shastras, like that, who spoke Sanskrit. You know? And that led us to more interest in Shonu Shamdashini. If you're interested in these areas, he's the person. S-O-N-U, and the last name is Shamdashini. S-H-A-M. You know? He was born in Singapore, went to India, looked for a guru, came in contact with Carl Jung's work, and that stimulated him. And eventually he became a historian of psychology, history of psychology. And he's got an appointment at the University of London. Actually, he's in the German department, room 108. But that's probably just a funding thing. But his actual work is in the history of medicine. They have a big thing there. You know? And formed the Philemon, P-H-I-L-E, Philemon, M-O-N. It's online there. Foundation. And the Philemon Foundation is dedicated to publishing all of Carl Jung's works. Okay. And talking about it, the complete works of Carl Jung is not his complete works. What I read, actually, there were 35,000 letters. You know, of course, there's no internet at that time. And also, it was a whole lifetime of letters. And very few of these things have been published at his point. Because then eventually, after I read those, I came to the next book. Okay, let me see which of these books, the Philemon Foundation, what's the best one? I want to actually talk to Shonu Shamdashini now. We got a real person with a real face. Yeah? And so let me read some more of his books first, because you got to know how to expand the Bhagavatam in a proper fashion. So looking at him, his different books, the one I finally decided on there was The History of, what's it called, Carl Jung and the History of Psychology, the Hopes of a Science. And Jung wanted to make, that was his whole thing. He wanted psychology to be a science. Just like Prabhupada wanted Krishna consciousness to be a science, like that. You know? So I started reading that. It was $60 you bought the book. And I downloaded it in the Kindle format to my computer for only $30. Okay. And again, tremendous scholarship. And Shamdashini, very, very, what's the word? The whole Jungian community has this very much feeling of they're conscious of the fact that we all have our perspective on things, and they don't deny it. And then, and actually facing their own attachments, and that makes it much more possible for them to produce something, which is really, honestly, objective. You know? Yeah. And so I've read about 20% of that so far, and it's coming out with such incredible things in terms of Jung's interests, attractions, and everything else, many things which are not even mentioned before, like that, and so on. So we're just about ready, and by December 1st, I want to write an article or a letter to them, Philemon, Shonu, Shamdashini, and try and create a dialogue. Because that's the first thing on Sankirtan, right? You've got to stop the people. You know, that out in the street. Mr. And people are going by one after another. You know, march you into the ground. So first thing is you got to be able to, you know, stop them. And then after that, some techniques and some thing. Every salesman has his own fashion, you know, what to talk about. But again, the main thing is we don't know people. It's so multifaceted. It's so big in this case, you know, that the thing is to create a dialogue. You know, so then we're expanding Srimad Bhagavatam based upon dialogue. Oh. I think Garuda made this point that all the Puranas, all the Upanishads, everything is a dialogue. so commonly like that. So preaching means, and you know, that's why it's kind of weird to be talking for 49 minutes nobody else responding, that you know, we're creating a dialogue. Yeah. Okay, yeah. What's happening here? Okay. Yeah. Someone's calling me. I push the ignore button. Yeah. And because of that, then we begin to know the person, like Sukadeva Goswami. He in Canto 6, he gives a bogus suggestion to Maharaj Pariksit, and Maharaj Pariksit politely rejects it. He gives another bogus suggestion, and I think Maharaj Pariksit kind of looks, doesn't even say anything, but maybe just looks a little bit, you know, critical. And then Sukadeva Goswami says, yes, only bhakti yoga will solve the problem. Narada Muni does the same for Dhruva, you know. So many times, you know, this guru, do a little analysis, stick out your tongue, you know, look at your eyes, tell me how it happened. You know? And then because of this, other things are taken off the shelf. Other parts of the Bhagavatam are taken out. Other stories are taken out. You know? Other concepts, and we're making our own analogies. You know, Prabhupada gives modern instances, you know, to illustrate the principles in the Bhagavatam like that. The book Bhagavatam, which is maybe principles, and the person Bhagavatam. In this way, with your blessings, suggestions, and also whatever letter we produced, and you also want to put it with a cover letter on Dandabhas, and then see, like, you know, what kind of, see other devotees who want to get involved in this, because it looks like it's a very big project. You know, it's like opening up a whole new community. It's like how to preach to the hippies. And the Prabhupada came to America and gradually began to find which community was responding. He developed different programs for them and different things like that, you know, and systematizing it so other people can be engaged in different ways like that. Is it really necessary to print? They think it is a 30-year project to print all of Jung's works, you know. Is it necessary? Kind of finished off with that point. We had a nice discussion with one of Garuda's associates, Professor Ken Rose. He's over there in the Newport News. And he was a devotee. He was initiated. He all the way to first initiation in traveling Sankirtan. But then somehow or other, I think because he was explaining some real problems with the politics and stuff, he kind of got out of being a temple devotee and went back to his career of kind of like intellectual development. And now he's a very respected, you know, sought-after professor on comparative religion. So I was talking about my attitude of just like trying to revive Western people's interest in their Christian roots and their Greco-Roman roots and that kind of stuff, and show them how, you know, the Bhagavatam enlivens those things. And he was saying, no, it's all kind of gone. He said, look how many yoga studios there are, how many karate studios, kung fu. And he said, really, it's better just to go straight to the Oriental route. Jung, when he was talking about introducing Oriental ideas in the West and psychology, he said, don't ever think that I'm trying to minimize these. He said, they've developed a psychology which is vastly superior to ours. Ours was not born yesterday. It was born this morning. You know? And Shonu Shamdashni says, still, there's no real consistent psychology or even something, even in many ways, even approximating a science in many ways. So it's a still very wide open area. You know? So, but Jung said, but trying to introduce these ideas in the West now would probably not only be useless, but maybe even dangerous. And so, of course, you make this comment that Hitler was supposedly introducing them in terms of the Aryan super race, the swastika. And yes, it appears it was a fact that it was extremely abused like that. You know? So there's a whole, but then Shandra Samdashni said, but that was 100 years ago, or 70 years ago, 80 years ago. And so the environment has very much changed now. Yeah. Okay, so maybe this community of people. And also he goes on to point out how Jung's ideas are directly formed, Jungian psychology, psychiatry, and other people who are following them to various degrees intellectually. But so many of the concepts have entered into our whole perspective and worldview without being known, of course. And so therefore, as we begin to understand them and use them, of course, it's another way, you know, to try and get our ideas across like that, according to everybody's individual nature and propensity. Okay, thank you very much. Please forgive our offenses. And please, anybody have any comments, questions, complaints? Hare Krishna.
if no one's going to say anything, Dandavat Maharaj. It's Vidogda Madhava.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I like your the visuals on the 10 subjects of Bhagavatam compared to the titles of the cantos. That was nice. Something that Prabhupada says in the purport, it is unlimited in strength, meaning Bhagavatam, however one may expand it according to one's own ability. And it reminds me of the infinite character of Bhagavatam, and it's the literary incarnation of Krishna for this age. And even with our limited abilities, we can understand when we try to prepare for classes that there are many themes in the verses and commentaries, and we have to choose what to speak about. And it's practically an endless activity, connecting verses and purports to other verses from Bhagavad Gita and the other bhakti shastras, and explaining this great science, as Prabhupada used to refer to it. So, we have such an expansive library of commentaries from the Goswamis and the Acharyas. But even today, it continues. As Krishna, he reveals himself in the heart of his sincere devotee. So, it's this expanding. Krishna is expanding as we speak, and his glories are unlimited. And it's our life. Harikatha is our life, and Bhagavatam is an unlimited source for that.
Yeah, in so many areas too. I mean, I was just talking about my one experience. So hopefully, but other people I read about Captain Howie on the internet, and so on. Yeah, and this wonderful Isanga. But beyond that, oh my goodness, Mother Jamuna winning first prize vegetarian cookbook. Just the Burning Man festival. There's just so many opportunities, In some ways, it's the thing is that the Bhagavatam itself, and we just deal with it, like you're saying, it inspires us. What are the first things that we should talk about as part of it too? Is that there's so many things, and what are the important things to talk about first, and like that, depending on the audience. Paramatma's there, right? Dictated to us. Oof, wow. Did you have any association with Hansaduda?
A little bit. I could understand how some people, he had some charisma, definitely. I saw him in India, but short time with him.
Ah, okay. Yeah. He was, he was there in Berkeley for maybe like about, 3 years or something, And right. Then also, Jayananda, Hansaduda, and Swarup Damodar were kind of like my physical association with Prabhupada, in the sense that, they would say, oh, Prabhupada did this, Prabhupada did that, So that's how I was, a lot of my connection with him.
Swarup Damodar was very special.
Yeah. But different people appreciate, for some people just couldn't appreciate him, always too pedantic, this and that. See, everybody, Prabhupada, the sun warms up Venus, the sun warms up Mars, the sun warms up Jupiter. So different planets take, different benefit and produce different things according to their different nature, Hansaduda
right.
always appreciated how much Prabhupada was a genius. Hansaduda came from kind of like aristocratic family, something like that and stuff, So he very much kind of appreciated too, like Prabhupada's, aristocratic features and his kind of German, Kshatriya type mentality. And so he would present those aspects like that. It's like Prabhupada told us to do this.
Yeah, he defeated that Mayavadi in Sri Lanka.
Kabor.
Prabhupada really liked that.
Dr. Kabor, yeah.
Hmm.
Rameshwar was one of the greatest antagonists of Hansaduda, said that You see, Prabhupada was extremely particular about anybody else he would include in his books. Maybe he mentioned a name here and there, but he said, I think he was the only person in all of his books where he told them, put that in the Isa Upanishad, he told them, put him in there. Yeah. And so, you see, yeah, he was glorifying him in that sense. He liked so much how he took the science preaching, but he took the science preaching like a Kshatriya. Yeah. Not like
right.
Subdhamma.
That was done publicly, serially, in a newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
That was, so that guy got threatened.
He was such an arrogant guy, so proud, and people were following him. And then the Hansarita, just like very simple arguments, you know, but very effective, and just, you know, annihilated him like that. Oof. Wow. But I've seen the same arguments were being used with scientists, and they took them apart. You know, for example, they said, create a grain of rice. And the guy said, we can do that.
they can do it now? They're saying they can create a grain of rice?
Different things involved. For example, the carbohydrates. Do you want the germ or not? Okay. And even the germ, of course, there's different levels now, recombination and this kind of stuff. But
yeah, but they're dealing with what's already there. They can't generate it from nothing.
Yeah, yeah. That's the whole question of how much do you want us to generate a grain of rice, you know, like that. Yeah. And so, but other things too, the other things he had in there were, I think, like something like crystals or something, which, you know, can be made this way and that way. Yeah. So when
logic is assailable by the same process. Lord Chaitanya showed us that.
But
you know, he would present an argument, and then he would defeat the argument, and then he would defeat that argument, and then nobody could touch anything he was saying. So, but. In a particular time and place, if some scientist gets cowed down or you make more sense than the scientist, that's a victory for the Vaishnavas.
Oh, yeah. And also even better is afterwards the scientist thanks you. Yeah. Like he doesn't become your enemy, but he Sarvabhauma. Both Prakashananda and Sarvabhauma, he defeated them both, but afterwards they became his disciples. You know?
Right. Once Rita Ananda Maharaj was in a debate with some guy, and he said something offensive to Prabhupada, and it was just a brilliant stroke on his part that he said he couldn't continue, you know, talking to this man if he was, you know, if he went to that place. And basically stripped away some part of what this guy came to present, and just took him apart after that.
Ah, I know one famous lecturer was Dr. Bharati, and he was like, Maharaj was a brahmachari, and this guy was, you know, big Sanskritist in some university where nobody spoke Sanskrit or something, and a Bharati too. So Maharaj was starting off. I think he was giving like his presentation and quoting some Sanskrit. Of course, he's Brahmachari, American Brahmachari, and this and that, and maybe some of the pronunciations are wrong and a little bit. And so Bharati was kind of like sitting on the platform and kind of like smug and, you know, making sarcastic, you know, facial grimaces. But then he quoted this verse, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanash Chaitananam Eko Bahunam. And when he said that, this thing is a famous thing, and we're hearing it. But Bharti, it was just like somebody just stuck a pin in a balloon. But Bharti just went ballistic. He says, why did you say that? Why did you quote that? Why did you say that? What is this? It's like, and Maharaj also was shocked, you know, because it's so obvious, you know. And after that, it was like the guy would turn into a monkey or something, like he was going to, you know, jump off his chair and do some obscene thing in the corner. It was just like, I think Maharaj himself was like, you know, shocked, you know, so that the potency of being able to take the Bhagavatam, right? That's the thing. The potency is the Bhagavatam, but to be able to select the verses and use them properly and that kind of stuff, that's the whole potency. So that's why so many verses and so many cantos and stuff, and then devotees using it. Boy, when you hear devotees preaching how they're doing it, it's just, you know, so inspiring how it's put in just the right way, and the audience can appreciate it then. I remember one time, I went to one story, your mother must be Nitya Rupa. We were up at the campus, right in front of Berkeley campus, you know, greatest, biggest university in the world maybe, or something like that, one of the biggest. Nice. There's so many food carts there selling stuff. And so we're doing Harinam Sankirtan chanting, maybe about 8 of us. And she was over in the sari, like, you know, just distributing books to people coming on and off the campus. And by Krishna's arrangement, I saw this, like, she stopped some kind of, like, Arabian graduate student. You know, and of course, this guy was, of course, has this whole macho ego in terms of women and everything else. And she's preaching to him, and he's sitting there, like, smugly smiling. And I kept seeing this going on, you know. And so finally, he had defeated her, you know, logically, you know. And he starts to walk away with his Arabian ego, as big as 100 camels. And she just says to him, this total feminine smugness, "Well, I don't care what you say. This philosophy is perfect." Like that. He could not take it. He went back, and of course now she just was trying to ignore him, you know, and talk to somebody else, and his male ego wouldn't let him go away. And so I kind of saw this going on. And after some time, I looked back over, and he's walking away with this totally, you know, frustrated look on his face, with his book in his hand, staring at the book, and she's folding up like $20 and putting her book back. And the guy's
Krishna empowers his devotees. If you have Krishna within your heart, you're invincible.
Yeah. And whatever potencies you have, Krishna just uses them, you know, uses them. Understand the Bhagavatam in your own way. Okay, so thank you, everybody. Please excuse our imbecile nature. And we try to listen to every single class during the week, very enlivening. You know, everybody's individual classes and stuff like that and so on. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Dandavat Maharaj. Where's Ramananda?
I just came back on. I was on hold for a minute. Is class still going on?
We just ended it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no wonder I was muted. I was wondering, why is nobody responding when I say I was asking a question, nobody responding. Anyway.
There's a festival of the Holy Name at the Lachua Temple. If you go to the website, they'll have a little place where you can see it live. Pancha Goda's on the harmonium right now. They're having it. It'll be all day today and all day tomorrow.
So what's going to go on, Madame? Tell us about what's. Tell us all about. I'm kind of curious.
What was the question?
Tell us all about.
About the Festival of the Holy Name.
What is the purpose of it? How many people are participating? What activities are planned? Give us a synopsis of what's going on.
Picture's worth a thousand words. You know, if you want to give my screen over to Ramananda, you can take a picture of it and see what's going on here for a second.
I was watching the news the other night. I just was kind of curious what was going on in that riot in, I think, Minnesota or wherever it is. And so they showed a visual of what was going on, but the newscaster was very careful to say, listen, this is only, you know, don't take this as the whole picture of what's happening. This is just a limited shot. So make me think, just to see one picture. I want to know all about the purpose of the festival, etc.
All right. Well, the purpose is for everybody to get together. There's probably about 100 people from other temples, a lot of people from New Vrindavan, from North Carolina, all around have come. Atlanta, there's Vishwambar, there's Madhava right behind him, you know, right here. Madhava, he's. And the devotees, they just chant all day from 10 to 10 today, 10 in the morning to 10 at night, and then tomorrow, 10 in the morning to 10 at night, as opposed to 24 hours, because it kind of throws everybody's schedule off. So we're just being a conservative temple here, we do it to 12-hour days as opposed to all night. And it's very nice. The second generation more or less organizes it. And Manu Ram, he's the one who hooks it up, so it's on, this is live. And then he records it all too, so he puts it up onto their website. You can see the website is Festival of the Holy Name 2014. And let's see if I scroll down. Although
on YouTube?
They'll put on more. They'll put on more like who's the different people at every hour. There's Agni Davis here from the islands.
Trinidad.
And he'll be, yeah, Trinidad. And he'll be chanting later, too. He's been here. The week before it started, about a week ago, they all the different people came and they had programs every night from 6 to 10 at someone's house. And they would make prasadam for everybody. A couple times was at the temple. Yesterday we had a Thanksgiving program here with about 600 to 800 people came. And it's very nice community environment. You'll see a lot of people. Every hour they'll change and there'll be somebody else chanting. Vrindavan's got a spot, I think, in an hour. She goes on too. Parijata's there. She'll be chanting. She's just here visiting for a couple days.
So how long, Madan, did you say this whole, from how many days is this festival?
It's 2 days. Instead of it being a 24-hour kirtan, which was the way a lot of temples have it now, this is called the Festival of the Holy Name, and it's 2 12-hour days, from 10 in the morning to 10 at night, 2 days in a row. And if I click the unmute, we can hear the chant.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
He just came from Vrindavan here for a month or so. A lot of big programs he's doing over in Vrindavan, India.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So you can go to the Alatra Temple, and then you'll see on the right-hand side there'll be live, and then if you click on that, then there'll be another jump link that'll say for the Festival of the Holy Name. Click on that, and this brings you right to here, unless... There's other ways you can get to it too, probably. Festival of the Holy Name 2014 from Krishna.com. Okay?
Is it more about chanting, or is it kind of like a japa workshop where there's talk?
No, it's just chanting. Everybody's just, there's a nice set of deities that were brought there by Gaur Shakti, second generation, who's Toshan Prabhu's son, and nice big deities. They pan around quite a bit to show the different devotees that are there. And there's these tents, there's about 4 tents set up. So the second generation, they're working in one of the other tents. Over on the right, they all cut vegetables and get all the stuff together so they cook a nice meal and prasadam for everybody. And they had to bring some heaters. You can see there's one of the heaters back there. It's a little chilly today, a little unusually cold. There's some kind of a cold wave going on the mainland here. But they just chant, constantly chanting, wonderful, wonderful chanting. And that's all the Festival of the Holy Name just means to chanting Hare Krishna the whole time.
How do you put up all the guests? You said there's about 100 people came. How did they get facilitated?
Actually, some stay at the temples, some stay at people's houses, some stay in hotels. I'm not a part of that, but there's never been any problem with it. You know, a lot of people know people, and then some people more comfortable just staying in a hotel. And I've never seen anybody have a complaint about that.
Good.
Maybe
and do they charge a fee for guests that come?
No, I don't think there's any fees involved with anything. It's a wonderful festival.
Sounds
and
like
you just
really nice.
Just chanting all day and into the night, and then the next day all day. And as I've been pointing out, that they've been doing this every night at a different place. It was the temple last night. The night before it was at Nalini Kanta's. The night before it was at Premananda Gore's. And they just invite everybody comes in. They just chant for about 3 or 4 hours, take prasadam.
How are you personally participating?
Well, I don't. I'm not particularly involved with it. Vrindavan's there. She's going to be chanting the next hour. I'm more or less with the morning program. I help with that here. And I'll go by and participate in it as one of the participators, the chanters, but not the one with the microphone.
So you go and join in the kirtan. Nice.
Yeah.
How cold is it?
Right now, let's see, I have to check my button here. It's 50. Very sunny, but 50 degrees. But tomorrow it's going to go back up again. It'll be 70 tomorrow. So today's a cold day. So we see that they have some sweaters on. But if it's in the sun, as long as the sun's out, it doesn't feel bad. When the sun goes down. But everybody should just tune in. They have amazing chanters. Like the other night, they had Madhava, who also chants nice, but he plays the Madanga. Incredible. I didn't know he was also a Madanga player. That's Vishrambar. He's also an incredible Madanga player, but he's a little fancy.
I watched one of Madhava's instructional videos on playing Madanga, and you're correct. He's really good.
And if you go to the website, they have the recordings, this Festival of the Holy Name, of the previous years. And they're all downloadable. You can download them. I leave them all up there from each. And you can find different personalities that you like their chanting, and you can listen to their chanting and download it. So this will also be up in some after a while. Besides the live, they'll put it up later.
Nice.
Perhus, would you mind if we went ahead and closed up now?
Thank you, Ramananda. Hare Krishna.
All right, thank you.
Easy to find.
Thank you, Madan, for that. Glory to
Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.